Support for this public radio podcast comes from the Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, online at shrm.org.
A Shanghai Surprise.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli. An astonishing rise for the stock market in Shanghai today. It topped 4,000 just before closing a bit under that. The Chinese market's risen 50% this year after doubling over the past year. I talked this morning to our correspondent Scott Tong in Shanghai about whether they're in for a bubble.
Well, plenty of officials in the government are worried. On Sunday, a governor of the central bank was asked if he was worried about a bubble, and he came out and he said yes. Well, today the investors in China gave a great big whatever to these leaders because it went back up over this psychological 4,000 mark.
Why are people defying the government on this one?
Well, there are a lot of ingredients to what's been happening in the Chinese stock market. I mean, it's just been going up for so long now. You have Chinese people being giant savers in the first place. They don't get good returns at the bank, so they have to put their money somewhere. And then you've got everybody talking about making money on the stock market. So there's this, you know, exuberance is the cliche, but there's this excitement. A few weeks back, I went to one of these brokerage houses where a lot of people are there, and it was a day after a big fall, but it was full because everyone thought it was a buying opportunity. And I asked the guy, are you worried about what's happening? He said, well, it's kind of like mahjong. It's like that game. It's like a card game. You lose, but then you're going to win.
Everybody's got the fever. What's the bad news scenario in all of this, Scott?
Well, the bad news is if this is indeed a bubble and there's a giant burst. If that's right, if this is a bubble, the bad news scenario is a lot of people who've just started investing in stock market, bought at the top, borrowed from their friends, took money out of their savings accounts, put it in the market and then lose it all. And then they panic. And in China, who knows what happens when millions, hundreds of millions of people panic.
So everybody's gambling. The regular guy is getting into the game. What's the potential impact overseas if something goes wrong, if the bubble bursts there?
Well, the Chinese stock market is quite insulated from the global stock markets. At the same time, there can be a lot of indirect effects, obviously, depending on how this goes. If a lot of the Chinese companies that have been raising all this money suddenly have less cash to buy the bulldozers, the factory parts, the raw materials, the timber, the iron, then that's a longer conversation about the whole China machine slowing down.
That's our Scott Tong reporting from Shanghai. While we're talking about markets, Wall Street's waiting for Ben Bernanke and company to speak today. On Tuesday, the Dow closed down 4 to 13,309. The Nasdaq closed up a point to 2751, and the S&P closed down 2 points to 1507. When in doubt, lower your expectations. The National Association of Realtors is saying it expects existing home sales to decline this year. Where is the most expensive residential real estate in the world? Pat Loeb says a new report pins the needle on London.
Houses in London cost a cool $4,600 a square foot. That makes number three, New York, look cheap at $3,200 a square foot. Knight Frank researchers say an elite group of buyers known as high net worth individuals are driving these prime real estate markets. They're people with at least $10 million to spend. In London, most of these buyers come from outside the country. 60% come from Russia, the Middle East, or America. Some investors may choose London to avoid taxes, according to Lucy Kamazar. She's a journalist and the co-chair of the Tax Justice Network. She says England doesn't tax income made outside the country by people who are not permanent residents.
It just means you have to spend a certain amount of time outside the country. But for these people with their own jets, that's pretty easy.
Kamazar says the boom in London real estate is bad for locals who can't afford to buy or even shop in certain neighborhoods. I'm Pat Loeb for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management, Mellon.com. And the Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, online at shrm.org. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Sustainability Fund of the Tides Foundation, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
Private equity buyers are swarming around the phone company Alltel. The Wall Street Journal reports this morning that suitors are holding meetings with the $22 billion phone company. Meanwhile, how to account for the incomes of private equity partners is the subject of informal meetings on Capitol Hill this week. Marketplace commentator Robert Reich has some advice for them.
Way back in the 1970s, newly minted MBAs with dollar signs in their eyes wanted to be CEOs. And then in the 1980s, they went into investment banking because the money was even better there. In the 1990s, they went into high-tech venture capital and dot-coms. Now it's private equity. Why? Well, the average big company CEO has to do with a measly $7 million a year, taxed at 35%. But private equity partners, raking in hundreds of millions a year, are taxed at 15%, less than the tax rate paid by middle-class Americans. And what exactly do private equity partners do? They use the investment money of pension funds and college endowments and wealthy investors to buy up publicly held companies and turn them briefly into privately held companies. And then they do what you might do when you want to resell your home. Redecorate, refurbish, knock out some walls, apply fresh paint, sell the furniture. Sometimes they keep the same CEO of the publicly held company, give him some private equity too, and tell him to apply the good ideas he stored up but never implemented when he was just earning $7 million a year as CEO, because now he can really cash in. And then a few years later, the private equity partners resell the company to the public, usually at a big profit, with a fat cut of billions of dollars for themselves. And those billions are only taxed at 15%. That's because those billions are considered a capital gain from investment. And courtesy of the Bush tax cuts, that tax rate is the lowest ever. But really, those billions are compensation, what these guys pay themselves for their work. Now the tax writing committees of Congress are taking a look at this giant loophole, and private equity partners are besieging them and, of course, screaming, "No, you can't do this to us. We won't work as hard if we're taking home only $60 million a year instead of $80 million. And that will cripple the American economy." Baloney.
Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich now teaches public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. In Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli. Enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.